The first hour, we're just going to mess around. And with me to mess around is, again, one of my favorite people in the whole city, Kevin Bozeman. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, Kevin is a native of Chicago. He is performing stand-up in clubs all across the country. He's making a living, making people laugh, which is a great thing to do.
Right? It is a giant hustle.
It's a giant hustle.
I'm always just like, yo, let me play your spot. I'll do well. People will come and see me. And they're like, hey.
You have to beat your own drum all the time. And then you have to meet and exceed those expectations.
Those are two things you have to do. You always have to promote yourself. And then you always have to live up to the promotion that you give. You can't. Because a lot of these club owners, honestly, are so lazy. They don't come and watch every show. If I had a club and I had 5-6 shows, I'm there for shows. I'm like watching to see
quality control.
Right. Yeah. To make sure, right, like this is what I want. Like I'm not going to go and watch for 15 minutes because, you know, a live show, you don't know what you're going to get.
Right.
Like you don't know, like maybe the crowd is really intoxicated and you're dealing with a rowdy crowd. Maybe it's a late show Friday night. Everyone's tired. So you got to do a different
spiel. Drinking too much, whatever.
So
serving
you got to put
food. That's another one. People serving food sometimes.
Right. Which is the worst.
It's the worst. It gets in the way of the visual. It's distracting.
You can't laugh eating the steak. You just can't. You cannot laugh. Oh, that was a good joke. Like that's like I want to choke someone out with a joke. And then that's going to be my credit. Like, I'm not going to even mention my TV crowd. I mean, like, he wants to kill someone. He wants to kill someone with one of his jokes as they was eating a steak. And Kevin Bozeman.
Kevin Bozeman. Heimlich Maneuver. Kevin Bozeman. Going to Google it. It's going to be
Kevin the Heimlich Maneuver Bozeman.
But the other thing about comedy is you're always hustling, right? You're always promoting yourself. You have to meet and exceed. And nothing is really in your control. I mean, you can get the lay of the land, but if people don't show up, if people are drinking too much, or people are talking.
The weather.
How, you know, it's just things outside of your control. What, I mean, can you say to yourself, if I have the right conditions, I can make people laugh? Do you feel that confidence when you walk into a room?
I feel like now I kind of like when the conditions are a little off.
Oh, you do?
Now I do. It's just like, you know, it's just like the test. It's like the next level up. Like you're playing a video game. Like it's the next level. Like, all right, give me something a little bit.
Oh, it's the
challenge. A little bit more difficult. Like I prefer like a great crowd, but I don't mind a crowd that's like, what? Why should we laugh at you? Who are you?
They have their arms crossed.
Like, you could tell the wife dragged the husband out right, and he's sitting there like, I'm going, but I'm not going to have a good time. Like, I'm like, I don't care if anyone else laugh. I only want you to laugh.
So like, you like that challenge?
I don't mind it, like, from time to time, but sometimes it's annoying because we have a job, but sometimes we're in moods. Like, we're just like, I don't want to.
Sure.
Like, look, you paid money to see me. Why are you in such a bad mood?
I don't get that at all, right? I mean, I understand as a lawyer when people come to see me, oh, they can be in a bad mood, believe me. Because they should be. Because they're getting sued, they're divorcing, they're bankrupt, whatever it is. But I don't get it. If you're going out to a comedy club, like to me, I'm laughing before I get there.
Well, everyone's always offended nowadays. It's a very...
Well, that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, it's very... Like, it's... I don't... Like, I know the rules of the game now. Like, I'm not... for it. Like, I believe some things are legit, but for the most part, I know the rules of the game, and basically you can't punch down. You know what I'm saying?
No. What,
like,
does that
you
mean?
Can't make fun of people that you shouldn't make fun of, like handicaps,
okay,
or like, you know, things like that. You
right,
can't punch down anymore. Where that used to always be, you know, you punch down on people being gay, poor, whatever. Like, that was like the easy laughs. And now it's just like, don't punch down. Always have to punch up. So you have to make fun of, like, the well-to-do situations or make fun of yourself.
Interesting. But, and I'm going to take a break, but when we come back, what I want to talk about is you do a lot of college entertainment, and you go from college to college, which is great because you must work well enough there to get the jobs.
Yeah.
But I know that that age group is extremely sensitive.
They are the most offensive.
I have people at the workplace that I have to just retool my whole way of thinking because I can't offend them. And I don't mean to offend people, but they take offense where I've never seen offense taken.
Yeah, for sure. It's everyone's always like a lot of times I feel like people are going just to look to be offended with something. They're not
right,
even looking
right,
to laugh. They are looking for you to trigger them. These people aren't happy. You can't.
Yeah.
I always tell people anyway, nowadays, if you do a comedy show and everyone loves you, you're doing it wrong. Because you are. Because you, like, my best comedy is, like, you got the stage, you got a platform. You can be funny and also say something relevant.
Yeah.
You can also share, like, something real that people might not agree with. And that's fine. But if you got everyone laughing, to me, that means you're not talking about anything. You're just up there just pleasing the masses. And that's not... I'm not knocking those people that do that, but it's just not my style of stand-up.
Let's take that up on the other side. And if you have any comments here for Kevin or for me, give me a call.
People ask me for advice all the time. Like, oh, man, like, what age should you tell your kids that Santa doesn't exist? Here's an answer: when you can no longer afford their Christmas list. It's not rocket science. When my son gave me his Christmas list, I was like, yeah, man, he ain't real. I'm sorry. This is a ridiculous list. What is wrong with you? We can go halvesies.
So,
Daddy could put something on it. You're ridiculous list. My second kid came out.
You're listening to Kevin Bozeman, who's here.
Which is really creepy to me, just that we're sitting around listening to myself.
Is that really creepy
too? Because I do that when I'm in the car by myself. I just listen to my soothing voice.
Do you laugh when you listen to yourself?
No. Sometimes when I listen to myself, it's very critical.
Yeah. Well,
I listen with a very critical ear, and I'm like, why would you say it like that? Why didn't you pause longer?
Yeah.
Why didn't you?
But this brings me to my next segment. People think that you're the class clown. You go up there, you're funny, you're off the, you know, from the hip. Surely you play with the audience and you do that kind of stuff and you're able to interact. But you plan your stuff, don't you? It's pretty planned.
Yeah, you're right. Like, that's the one thing that I learned as a comic, the more I did it, is like, you have to treat it like a real job. You got to put the work in. Like, you got to, you know, you're the writer, the director, the producer, the star. So you're everything. That's why it's so personal when it goes bad.
Right.
Right? If a movie bombs, not my script, I didn't produce it. I was just reading someone else's lines. Like, the lighting was wrong. All these things. The cinematography was off. But if you fail at stand-up, it is a failure on you. It is you. Because who else do you have to blame? That's why it's so easy. Like, this crowd sucks. No. Sometimes it's just... sometimes you can be like, yeah, it's not a good crowd, but not five shows in a row. If you suck five shows in a row, it's you.
So... there's this idea that comedians are dark people, and some of the listeners of my show know that my father was a stand-up comic, and that's how he raised us as kids, and I kind of was around it the whole time. My father wasn't a dark guy at all, but a lot of his friends really were. And is there something to be said for the darkness and the comedy kind of going together?
I find some of the best comedy comes from tragedy. That's true. It is true. Like, you think, look at how tortured Richard Pryor was.
Yeah.
Right? If you read his book, he was molested by an uncle, I believe. He was molested by an uncle. He's raised in a brothel. You see all these comics with drug problems.
Yes.
And they're just tortured souls. So, yeah, there is some darkness in comedy. I've seen it.
I think you could say that about authors, too. You know, authors, too.
Creative people in general. I mean, like, look at Nirvana and the all the musicians. Look at the actors that's killed themselves because of depression and just not being able to overcome darkness. We just lost a stand-up comic, Brody Stevens, 48 years old. Just a great comic, a great guy. I've only met him a couple of times, but he's just a great dude. You wouldn't think, oh, that dude is going to kill himself eventually. You just don't see it, and you don't know it, and they don't know. I always try to tell people, like, when people are like, they're just weak, they think they're doing you a favor by killing themselves. They feel like they're a burden on you. That's why they're taking their life. They're not taking their life because I'm so good. I've achieved everything. There's no need for me to continue.
I also think the pain is so excruciating to them that we can't imagine what that is, but it's so excruciating that drive to live, which is the strongest drive we have.
Right.
Everything is about
your natural survival instinct.
That it goes out the window, and you have the people who have the world, you know.
I have a local comic, very funny, Marty DeRosa, is a big wrestling fan, and he's also has depression. He has a podcast called Wrestling with Depression.
Oh.
And I was on there, and I was just like, look, man, I have bad days, but whatever my chemical balance is, I snap out of it. Like, I come around out of it. But I see, you could see where the darkness starts. You just come out of it.
Right.
But a lot of people don't come out of it.
Well, they don't see that there is a coming out of it.
It's right. Mm-hmm. They don't see it. They don't have that switch to just go, tomorrow will be better.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you know, I know this is hard to analyze comedy, and it's probably not, it's almost impossible. Like, you have these stories, like you have the three stories this week. We have Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, who was caught apparently buying sex acts in Florida. We have R. Kelly, who was charged. And then we also have the Jussie Smollett. So you have these things. And let's just say that, would you decide, let's say you're doing a show tomorrow, would you decide to do something on these topics, or would you stay away from them because they're so hot and so polarizing?
The only reason why I would stay away from it is because everyone is going to try to tackle it. So if I tackle it, I better have a take that I know no one else has.
Okay.
Right? So I do write about it. I write, sometimes things just don't make it out of my mouth, but it makes it on paper. But I do write about it, and then I look at it and I go, is this the quality I want to put out? It's like a restaurant. You're like, I grab a steak anywhere, but I'm putting out this quality because that's the reputation I have. So I always say all topics are on limits until they're not.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
Not till you say it does it become off limits. It's nothing. It's nothing but words until you say it, and then the reaction, and that's when you know it's either off limits or on limits. So I treat it. Yeah, so like this is what everyone's talking about. This is kind of our job. We're supposed to make sense in a funny way of what's happening in our community. That's why, like, when comedy clubs are like, don't talk about politics, it makes people uncomfortable. And I'm here to make people uncomfortable.
And let's make some more people feel uncomfortable in the next half an hour. You're listening to Kevin Bozeman on the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
They're the biggest scam ever. They don't even try to hide it. They show you how they rip you off. That's infuriating. Because you can't call and complain. Like, hey, we just want you to know before you fly, we're going to rip you off. We're going to show you how to do it so you don't have any stupid questions later. They itemize it. They charge you $5 for a September 11th security fee. It's been almost 20 years since 9/11. That should come with the flight. I buy a plane ticket and you don't crash into a building.
I love it. I love it. Now, come on. That's something everyone thinks is funny, right? That is so funny. Why are we paying that? You're right. Now, how do you come up with that? You're going through your day. You're on the airplane.
Because you see the flight and you see the price and then you purchase it. Then all of a sudden the price changed dramatically with all the taxes and surcharges. And then you read it and you see that they charge. Like, the rest of that joke, like, to that point, the rest of that joke was like, I just feel like if you're ever on a plane and it gets hijacked, you got the right to stand up and be like, who didn't pay their $5, right? Somebody must not have paid.
Therefore, we're crushing.
We are getting hijacked right now, and I'm pretty sure we have to pay a $5 September 11th security fee. So, yeah, but that's the type of things I do. Like, I just talk about social issues. I talk about political issues. I talk about events that happen. And I wanted have laugh, and I want to call into question some of the things that happen, and just being sarcastic and making fun of it is the way to do it.
Well, we had a texter who said, I want to make people uncomfortable is a rude and arrogant statement. And I emailed back and said, why, you know, why would that be? And he or she wrote back, maybe it's because I don't like stand-up comedy. George Carlin was funny and silly without getting personal.
He was very personal.
I thought he was very personal.
He was the most personal. There is no one that did more things, that talked about more political, social issues than George Carlin. And he made people uncomfortable with some of the things he said, because
he's calling out. He got a little bitter almost.
I think he was always bitter. I think that's probably why he never became like the mainstream movie star. He just basically, that's hard to do, you know? The Eddie Murphy's transitions, right. The Sinbad, the Seinfelds,
even Tom Hanks, right? Even.
They all transitioned into movies and everything. To just for 40 years writing stand up and just being relevant and talking about social issues and stuff, that's a really hard thing to do. But that's what he was great at. He talked about things that we took for granted, and he showed the hypocrisy of things. And if you show people to be hypocrites, it makes you uncomfortable. It just does, because no one likes to be considered to be a hypocrite. And if you write a joke that shows the hypocrisy of society, it makes you uncomfortable. To your point, we were talking off air, like, we watch the things that's going to make us comfortable. If you are conservative, you watch Fox News. If you're liberal, you watch MSNBC. And where I follow everyone on Twitter. Everyone, whether I agree with them politically or not, because I'm looking for material, right? I'm looking for them to say something that's just going to be it right or left, to say something funny. I watch all the news stations because I'm gathering information. And plus, if I have a strong opinion, I already like to know what you think.
Right.
Right. I already know what I think. So I'm not arguing my point of view. I'm arguing the point of view you already think that you're about to. I already know you're going to say that. So I already have a response. That's just preparing yourself. Like, I don't get why argue? Like, I discuss things that I don't know. I argue things that I believe in.
Makes sense.
I do it on stage too. So when I say my jokes, sometimes people scream things out. I'm prepared.
Right. Yeah, right? Absolutely. I don't know. You know, I just do think people are very, very, very uncomfortable with things out of their comfort zone. And I think the comfort zone has gotten very, very small. And I just don't think I like it, because, you know, some of these things. Okay, let me tell you an example. Now, I'm probably going to get a lot of hate text in this. I'm on Facebook and I'm scrolling down. And someone writes, what is it, National Blackface Month? ? Because all the blackface stuff was coming up.
Yeah.
And I had a little belly laugh, and then I thought, oh my gosh, I can't laugh at that. That's not appropriate. That is a racially insensitive quip. And then I look, it was an African-American guy who posted it. Then I go, okay, now it's okay.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Right.
But like, I even questioned. It was funny. I mean, we've had all these blackface incidents, and I'm not saying that that's funny, but it's funny that they're all in the same month, Black History Month.
I know.
It's funny.
This Black History Month has been inverted.
But it was a funny joke, and why shouldn't I laugh at that? I'm not laughing at it in a racist fashion. And when I know it's a black guy who told it, it was even funnier.
Yeah, it's better now. Wipe the bead of sweat off your head. All right, I'm still on the right path. Yeah, it's weird, like, because we have been everyone's walking on eggshells now, right? But in a way, I kind of like that we're bottoming out.
Do you think so?
Like, I feel like we're kind of bottoming out, and then like everything is just kind of imploding. It's going to be fun to see what comes out of it. I'm not saying anything good is going to come out of it. Maybe it might be something bad, but I don't like the implosion. I guess it's coming. Yeah. It's coming. We've taken so many things for granted. Like, and now it's we're just reaping it, like reaping the problems from it. And
yeah.
My job is great for me, because the more problems we have, the more material that I have to make you uncomfortable.
Right. And the more people want to laugh. You know,
yeah,
I think,
right?
I think when things are down, that's what people want
to
do.
That is the best. That's the best thing that happens to me when people come up to me and say, I was having such a bad day or a bad week. This show made me feel so much better. Thank you. Thank you. Like, those are the best compliments.
Well, even the politics. If politics are getting you down these days for some reason or another, when you see comedy about it, and you see Saturday Night Live or whatever your comedy is, whatever side you're on, it does make it funnier. It makes it. It doesn't bring it to heart so strongly where you can just go, all right, we're going to move on. We're going to have something different. Yeah. If you don't like what's happening now, it's going
to
change.
To that point, the key is to try to make fun of both sides, because I think both sides are laughable.
Right.
So why not make fun of both sides? And you can have strong points of view. And I think that's part of the problem is people don't hold their politics accountable. So you'll be like, that person did that. But your party did the exact same thing, but you don't notice that. And don't, so if you don't hold yourself accountable, you can't appreciate the tomfoolery that's going on. My job is to write jokes about both things, so it makes it easier for you to laugh. It's just, that's rule number one of stand-up. Before you make fun of others, you make fun of yourself.
Yes.
Right? If you make fun of yourself, if you just make fun of others, it's showing, oh, I'm better than you. And then people don't like a person that acts like they're better than them. But if you make fun of yourself and then make fun of others, then it's like, he made fun of himself first.
My father said the same thing. You have to get the audience to like you very quickly.
Yeah.
Remember Don Rickles? He told those horribly, offensive jokes.
Right.
If you go back and watch that stuff, you're like, oh my gosh. But he was so self-effacing, and he was almost apologetic when he delivered the line, that you didn't hate him. You kind of liked him, even though he was saying
you were going there. You were sitting in the front row. I remember years ago he did a, this is 15 years ago, he did a show in Chicago, and then he was doing the festival, Chicago Comedy Festival, and he walks out on stage, he goes, I can't believe I'm doing this for a lousy $100,000.
He's funny.
He's great.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk about some really hot topics in Chicago.
Yes.
And we're going to get your quick read on a bunch of different things. So you're listening to the Karen Conti Show. I'm talking to Kevin Bozeman, one of the best stand-up comics ever in the history of Chicago.
There's nothing crazier than to love another human being. You know, believe me, just listen to how people in love talk. It sounds crazy. I'll give you my heart, my mind, and my soul. Whoa, slow down, greedy. You get one of the three. I would argue that love is more psychotic than the word psychotic. Like, if you look on a crazy chart, be like, insanity, psychotic, love. Like, love make you slash tires and burn down people's houses.
Exhibit A.
Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. We're here with Kevin Bozeman, funny guy, Kevin Bozeman. Hey, Kevin, you've got an album. Let's hear about it.
Yes.
Do we call it albums now?
Yeah, it's still called a comedy album.
Okay.
I would love to have a vinyl album of all my albums. That would just be a nice little, just to have vinyl albums and have them encased and hung up on the wall.
Behave yourself. Yeah. Christmas time's coming.
Yes.
Yes.
Santa, please. Yeah, man, he ain't real.
This is too expensive.
A vinyl album? Yeah, man, he ain't real. Yeah, but they're called comedy album. This is Two Parent Love, which is one of the title tracks of the album. It's based about talking about kids. It's talking about politics, talking about relationships. It's just one, it's weird because it's my fourth album, and I just feel like all my albums just kind of show my evolution of stand up and how my delivery and timing has changed, which is great. I always tell people it's great to record an album because you get to see, this is where I was at this stage of my life. Like my first album, most of those jokes, my first album was just called my first CD. A lot of those jokes are so politically incorrect now, they wouldn't even fly. Like I couldn't even tell half of them. They would just offend people. It's 2005, but I still it's out there. Go out there and listen. I'm not shying away from it. I'm not apologizing. But I also know I can't do that anymore. That's the lesson. I think that was the point that Kevin Hart kind of missed was look, man, that's what it was. That's how society was. Then we were allowed to make fun of stuff like that. I know I can't do that anymore, and I don't do it anymore. So if you go through people's lives like that, and just like, it's just,
you've got to reinvent yourself. Right.
You gotta, you know. Yeah, you got to learn from things and just go, look, I was part of that process, and now I know I've grown. So anyway, Two Parent Love is out. It came out a month ago. It's available on all streaming networks. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on Google Play. You can get it from Pandora, Tidal, whatever you stream. It's just, I feel like it's a good, like if you're working out or something, just, yeah, you know, sit there.
And you work clean.
On a treadmill. I can work really clean. Some of my jokes are not, but some of them are really clean.
Yeah, I mean, I always think that you're more commercial, you know, that way. I mean, you know. It really
depends. It really depends on, like, I put out a clean version and a regular version.
Okay.
So that's what I did. It's just words. And I tell comics all the time that they should always learn how to work clean, because that's where money is at. TV money,
private parties. You want to do a convention. You want to, you know,
speak to corporations.
Yeah. Right,
like,
right.
I do church shows sometimes.
Sure.
Like, because I can work clean. That's where money is. If you just make yourself a one-trick pony, then you're limiting yourself. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do it. You should always do what makes you happy. But yeah, this album, there's a cleaner version, which is available online, called Collect Your Thoughts. And then the regular adult version, Two Parent Love, is out there. I would love if you guys grab it. Write a review.
Yeah, do that. Kevin Bozeman, check it out. Hey, can you wait? Can you come move into the 8 o'clock hour with
of
us?
Of course.
Okay, because let's talk about Jussie during that time period. I want to talk, and I want to open up the phone lines to have people call and tell us what you're thinking about with these cases, these three cases that have been kind of talked about all week, the R. Kelly case and Jussie Smollett, and of course, Robert Kraft. But I want to ask you, I'm just going to throw out a news story, and I want to hear your random thoughts on this.
Okay.
The state of Oregon has proposed legislation that would lower the voting age to 16. It's going to go on a referendum, and they're going to vote on it, and then they're going to decide if their local elections are going to be allowing 16-year-olds to vote. What do you think?
I think that's consistent with this country about having, like, you tell people you can't drink at age 18, but you can go fight and kill for the country at age 18.
You can drive, like, you at 16?
You can drive at 16, but I don't think you should vote. I like the age of, once you're able to, like, I don't like the fact that you be 16 years old and you can disagree with your family politically and then be like, I'm going to vote this way. You're like, I'm paying for everything. You can't go and change the way I'm supporting you. I believe this politics is the way to best support you, and you're undercutting me and you're living under my roof. I believe that once you're able to go and live out on your own, you should be able to vote. So I like the age of 18.
I see what you're saying. So you're cutting it off basically, like, once you can fend for yourself, then you have the right to vote for the elected people who are going to be providing for us, or just giving us the laws that we have to abide by. That's interesting. And I think some of the young people, of course, the entitled young people, are saying that, you know, listen, we get held to the standard in a criminal case. I can be 16 years old. I can be tried as an adult and thrown in jail for the rest of my life. So why shouldn't I? You know, I don't know.
Because that's a choice. You are choosing to do something bad, right? That's a different thing than having a right or choosing to do something bad. Having a right to vote. I do believe, though, everyone should just be born and have the right to vote. That should be just like they issue your birth certificate. Here's also your right to vote. And then you can do with it as you please, but you can have your right to vote. We shouldn't have to register. That should just come with just part of being living in this country. You're born, here you are, you can vote.
I don't know what the facts are, because I hear both sides. I hear very good evidence that there's a lot of voter fraud. I mean, people aren't lining up for voter fraud. People line up for fraud when it comes to a lot of other things, stealing cars or whatever. Yeah. But voting, it's not like people are making up stuff just to vote. I don't
believe it's not as right. With nothing that's ever shown to be concrete. They say it,
but I've never seen
it. It just kind of disappears. You say it when you're running for office, And then once the election is over with, it just kind of disappears. No one ever has a book or report that supports that theory.
Okay, here's the next story. The chicken is local, but was it happy? Now a GPS is going to tell the life story of your chicken. People are very curious about where their organic chicken comes from. So a Chinese company is going to keep track of 100,000 chickens with trackers. They're going to have sensors that upload their exercise information. It's going to have facial recognition of the chicken so that when you eat your chicken, by the time you buy your chicken, you're going to know exactly where that chicken was, how it exercised, and how it met its
so
demise.
Are you saying that the chicken comes with a little biography booklet?
Yes, I think so.
Hey, here's a story about Henry the chicken. Before you enjoy Henry, you might want to know that he likes to take long walks in the park. People are monsters.
He likes listening to Kevin Bozeman.
He listens to Kevin Bozeman too. Wait, that's why you're so happy when you eat this chicken, because he find the two pair love was hilarious.
Can you even believe that? Is that going to catch on? I'm going to say no.
And how much are these chickens going to cost? $1,000 per chicken just to follow that person's
maybe
life?
Maybe the first time they never will KFC where everyone else goes.
This is kind of the time that people have.
Yeah.
Like there's some real problems. Why can't these people put this time into the Flint water supply?
Hey, here we go.
Why can't we put this energy into fixing water?
I like that idea.